From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch as we wrap up our coverage of the 2019 Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, held this week at the U.S. Department of State here in Washington, D.C. Vice President Mike Pence spoke earlier today.
Welcome to the largest human rights ministerial ever held at the United States State Department.
We'll talk more about his comments later when Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs Travis Weber joins me. But first, other champions of religious freedom were also a part of the program. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith provided an assessment on the global state of religious freedom. He joins us in just a moment. Also, Dr. David Curry with Open Doors, one of the leading advocacy organizations for persecuted Christians, will join me later here on Washington Watch. And we'll go deeper into the religious persecution by the Chinese government with Bob Fu of China Aid. All of that and more to come on this edition of Washington Watch. So don't go anywhere. If you happen to miss any of the program on your way home, you can find it all later archived at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, as we wrap up a week focused on the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom here in Washington, D.C. at the State Department. And the reason we chose to focus on this all week long, number one, we were there, a part of it, but the mainstream media didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. And I think this is a huge issue to see the administration lead out on drawing attention to this first freedom, this fundamental right to have the freedom to believe. And that means to believe, not to believe, change your beliefs. And this, if we get this right, and we've talked about that, during the week, but if you get this issue of religious freedom right, the other things fall in place. The other freedoms become secure and stable. Without it, it's hard to bring that stability. Well, this week, being the second, brought a lot of new faces, and that was encouraging to see, new faces to the fight for religious freedom. But we also saw some longtime champions, like my good friend, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith. Congressman Smith represents the 4th District of New Jersey, serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and co-chairs the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission. Congressman Smith, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
Big week here in Washington, D.C. I know there's a lot going on in Capitol Hill, but there in the swamp at Foggy Bottom at the State Department, this is really a paradigm shift for our State Department to be focused on this issue of religious freedom.
Oh, absolutely. And, Tony, I want to thank you for your leadership as chair of USERF. I mean, the Religious Freedom Commission is really walking point on not only advising Congress and the State Department, but the world independently and aggressively and accurately as to what's happening in every country of the world. So as chairman, you deserve great praise for the work that you're doing there, and I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Chris. I mean, I come in the shadow of those like you have been on this a long, long time, and you were kind of a voice in the wilderness for so many years, you and Frank Wolf and others, but we've really come to that moment in time where all of that, the plowing, the sowing. Now I actually think we could be at a moment of reaping.
Oh, I think this historic, and it's second, of course, but I think, as the Vice President pointed out, the largest human rights meeting ever at the State Department, this is a game changer. And, of course, follow-up is critical, but the speakers, the survivors of religious persecution who all provided testimony, you yourself, Elon Carr talking about anti-Semitism, of course, Secretary Pompeo, Sam Brownback, who was the ambassador-at-large for religious freedom, and all the other participants and those who listened, who came from all over the world and then participated in many cases themselves, they go back energized as never before to promote, as you pointed out, this first freedom. And if you do get this right, so much of the other aspects of your country in terms of due process of law, other human rights, are usually not far behind. This is the one that walks point to make all the difference in the world. And, of course, as believers, everyone should have the ability to worship God in an unfettered fashion. It's so extremely important.
You just recently held a hearing, June 27th, a hearing on the state of religious freedom for Christians in China, Nigeria, Iran, and other places around the world. I mean, we're seeing our administration, our country, our government move to address these issues, but the problem is growing significantly around the globe.
There's no doubt about that. And matter of fact, as Open Doors, I know you'll have comments later from them. They testified and pointed out, and others have pointed out as well as yourself, the greatest persecution of all is against Christians worldwide, from China to those Christians suffering at the hands of Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and other ISIS, other terrorist organizations. But in countries, where there's terrible animosity towards Jesus and those who follow him. And it is bad and getting worse in a lot of countries, and China is probably among the worst in all the world.
Yeah, you wrote an op-ed last December, I believe it was, yes, about China, and the world must stand against China's war on religion. We're going to be talking with Bob Fu a little bit later. But China, they're ratcheting up their persecution of not just Christians, but of all religious people.
Oh, they are. The Muslim Uyghurs, well over a million, are in concentration camps, which is an act of genocide. And where is the UN holding them to account? Where are the world leaders? But what they do against Christians as well, there's an attempt under Xi Jinping, the dictator, to sinicize, it's called sinicization, where every believer and every community of believers have to comport with Chinese communist doctrine, the socialism of Beijing. And it means that whole parts of the Bible are being rewritten. There's surveillance in those officially recognized churches. Of course, the underground house church movement suffers horribly at the hands of the secret police. And it's gotten worse. It is draconian. And a lot of people are looking the other way. Certainly not our administration, I'm happy to say, but there needs to be, I think, even more done. And we do have tools in the toolbox, including individual sanctioning of people who commit these atrocities against believers. But Xi Jinping wants to control, if not eradicate, all things dealing with God and the eternal.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. Our guest in this first segment, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, a champion for religious freedom and the unborn, I should add. He's been a part. In fact, I was up on the Hill today meeting with him and Congressman Steve Scalise and Ann Wagner regarding the life issue and keeping that issue at the forefront of the public discussion. But I want to go to something today that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, a former colleague of yours, said as today this was a kind of a gathering of the governmental leaders. The civil society folks were yesterday and the day before, so today was kind of just government leaders and those of us involved in commissions like ours. But the Secretary of State announced a new International Religious Freedom Alliance. Its mission will be to find ways to promote the most basic of human rights and hold abusers accountable. I mean, this is good news that we have an administration that's not just doing what is required, but going the extra mile to defend religious freedom.
I can't say enough about Secretary Pompeo and his leadership. It is extraordinary. To put together a coalition of like-minded countries and individuals to prioritize does make a difference. On paper, rights are bandied about and then not implemented and not enforced, not protected. He's making sure that the hearts and soul and minds of the leaders put freedom of religion and freedom from persecution at center stage. So I've worked on this. I've been in Congress 39 years. I've worked on it for 39 years. This is like we've never seen before. Even under great people like Ronald Reagan and others, we did not have this incredible focus on religious freedom. We had none of it under Obama. We had just the opposite, in my opinion. So I think this is a game changer. And again, having everyone together, learning, being informed, because to work wisely, you've got to be informed. And your report that you do at the commission and the IRFA, International Religious Freedom Report, that Sam Brownback oversees, does provide incredible insights as to what's happening. It's a mirror to the world to say, we think this is what you're doing right. This is what we think needs to be fixed. So, again, hats off to Secretary Pompeo for this tremendous leadership.
Now, I don't recall if it was Secretary Pompeo or the Vice President who made reference to the fact that, you know, we know many of you were contacted, you know, and encouraged by the Chinese government not to attend. And we appreciate you being here. And we know some of you are not here because you yielded to that presence, that pressure. And we took note of that as well. You made reference to some of the tools in the toolkit. What are some of those tools that the United States government can use to, you know, persuade these foreign governments to get right on this issue of religious freedom?
Well, the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act, which was recently signed into law, as well as the original International Religious Freedom Act that Frank did in 1998, they provide a toolbox that is overflowing with very effective means to effectuate change. The designation of country of particular concern, CPC, puts the worst of the worst on a category, and you make recommendations on that as well at the commission. Sanctions, follow up on sanctions that are very wisely focused on, and they're all prescribed in the law, one after the other, and they are very significant. Holding individuals to account. We have a number of, both in the religious freedom law, but also the Global Magnitsky Act, the ability to say so-and-so is a persecutor of faith. That individual and his family and anyone else associated with him are not going to get a visa to come to the United States and will not be able to do business here, because so many of the top echelon that are part of this persecution apparatus, have all kinds of moneyed relationships here in the United States and elsewhere, and they like to travel here, send their children to higher education here. Well, we need to shut that down and say, you persecute the best and the bravest and the brightest of China, for example, or any other country who happen to believe in God. You're going to pay a price, and we're going to met that out to you. Also, training our ambassadors, our top people in our embassies and all U.S. Foreign Service, which is about 15,000 strong throughout the world, on religious freedom. I mean real training, not just a one-hour, you know, this is what religious freedom is all about, to really get into that. So all of that makes a difference. And finally, integrating religious freedom into every part of our U.S. foreign policy, from trade to Department of Defense work, so it is ever-present.
Well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. I don't think there'll ever be another moment like there is right now. And a lot of that is attributable to you, Chris Smith, and many of your colleagues that have been fighting these battles for years. So thanks so much,
and you,
thank you for joining us.
Thank you for your leadership.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Chris Smith of New Jersey, a great American. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Yes, there's a lot of work to be done, but this is a unique moment in time. Not a time to shrink back, not a time to go silent. All right, when we come back, Dr. David Curry with Open Doors joins us with a look at the persecution of Christians. That's next. Don't go away.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Many advances made by the homosexual movement are based on the claim that sexual orientation is immutable or unchangeable. This belief was a deciding factor in the 2015 Supreme Court case that redefined marriage to include same-sex couples. It has been a key argument for LGB activists fighting to restrict or ban therapies for people seeking help to overcome their same-sex attraction. But is sexual orientation written in stone? Should we brand people with an immovable sexual orientation label and tell them, you can't change, don't try to change, even if they want to? In a new publication from FRC, we reveal that sexual orientation can change. Survey data shows that heterosexuality is largely stable, but homosexuality is not. Even pro-LGB scholars are calling for the immutability argument to be abandoned. The question is, why is the LGB movement pushing this false argument? To learn more, visit frc.org/sexualorientation. That's frc.org/sexualorientation.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, we continue our look into the State Department's second annual ministerial to advance religious freedom as events wrap up this evening. A few side events still going on tomorrow. But over 1,000 civil, religious, and governmental representatives were gathered from over 100 countries at the invitation of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Here's another clip from the Vice President who spoke earlier today.
But for all the challenges that believers face in China, the treatment of people of faith in North Korea is much worse. Open Door has identified North Korea as the world's worst persecutor of Christians for the past 18 years. The North Korean regime formally demands that its officials act to, in their words, wipe out the seed of Christian reactionaries, and possession of a Bible is a capital offense.
Joining me now is Dr. David Curry. He is the president of Open Doors USA, the Christian advocacy group founded by Brother Andrew and referenced in that soundbite by the vice president. Dr. Curry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you, Tony.
Well, David, again, I know you've been on the program many times, but I just want, for the benefit of our listeners who might be new, just to let them know how much I appreciate the work of Open Doors and the work you do tracking the persecuted church, Christians, and not only just tracking the issue, but bringing help to them, standing with them in the countries where they find themselves persecuted. As the vice president pointed out, you have been sounding the alarm over what's been happening in North Korea.
Yes. Open Doors, over the last 65 years, has expanded into helping persecuted Christians and advocating for them in over 90 countries now. And it gives us a unique insight to what's happening in North Korea because it's just so unusual. The regime there, all of the power that they have at their disposal to try and control the expression of religious faith. In particular, of course, Open Doors concerns itself with people having the freedom to have a Bible, read a Bible, decide for themselves what they think about it. And it's just the most difficult place because they want to put so much pressure in all of the ways that they can imprison you and even kill you for your faith in Jesus.
Now, you in your in fact, the vice president made reference to the fact that in the negotiations and the conversations that have been taking place, that human rights, religious freedom has been a part of the conversation. I know that to be the case from a conversation with the vice president. But are you hopeful that there might be a breakthrough in North Korea with the conversations that are taking place between U.S. officials and North Korean officials?
Well, I had a chance after the vice president's speech to talk to him about a couple of these areas. And here's what I am hopeful about, and that is that this ministerial, I think, is a big deal in that it's starting to change the conversation in a way that I don't think people anticipated that it could. And so in that way, I think it continues to build this alliance of countries and people who understand, first of all, what's happening, and then that there are ways in which we can enforce religious expression for everybody, regardless of what their faith might be. So in that way, I'm hopeful. I have no ability to give insight into what can happen over the short period of time, the next 18-month time frame. But here's what I know. I've talked to North Korean believers on a regular basis. They are many. They are passionate about their faith. They're not going away. And I believe that the expression of faith in Jesus in North Korea is probably greater than it's been any time in since this regime took over.
Now, has it been your experience that since this administration has been in place and put a focus, a priority on international religious freedom, what are you hearing back from those that you talk to in these places where persecution is so prevalent? Is there a sense of a greater hope that help is now on the horizon?
I think so. I mean, I don't know that there's an agreement on political strategy around the world amongst believers, but I do know this, that when they're persecuted, no matter where it is, I was with a woman who'd been brutally assaulted by Boko Haram from Nigeria today, and she got a chance to meet with President Trump yesterday, and I know her community well. We're working in that community. They know, they care when the president and vice president and the secretary of state speaks out about what's going on. It changes things, and so it's very powerful, and that's why I think they're really leading the way in this, and I'm happy about it.
Of course, part of the solution, and this was a panel discussion I had yesterday with USAID, is that it's not something the government can do alone, but as we see increasingly government agencies like USAID and others that are willing to partner with faith-based organizations that are there in the field, and even really, I mean, as the president made reference to the data that you collected, Open Doors today, I mean, that's a part of that partnership. It may not look like it, but it is. It's working together to advance a greater understanding and respect for religious freedom.
Absolutely. It is a partnership. Let me give an example. 3 years ago, the vice president spoke up on what was happening in northern Iraq, how Yazidis and Christians were being pushed out of cities like Carmelash and others near Mosul. The government decided to step up through USAID and fund a lot of the stuff that would support a civic structure. Now, Open Doors then, because of the security stability that was growing, still growing there, it's not perfect, we were able to rebuild 1,456 homes of Christian families that could move back in. That's the kind of partnership. And it's not just Open Doors. It's all kinds of groups that are doing it.
Well, you guys do outstanding work. David, thanks so much for joining us. Great to see you at the ministerial.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, David Curry with Open Doors USA. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, we were also earlier able to catch up with Bob Fu of China Aid, and I interviewed him, and I'm going to give you that next here on Washington Watch. Then our Vice President of Government Affairs and Policy, Travis Weber, is going to join me as we go over some of the highlights of this year's ministerial. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch coming on the other side of the break.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, continuing our coverage of the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom being held at the U.S. Department of State here in Washington, D.C. And one of the issues talked about earlier in the week, in fact, we spoke about it on Tuesday. We played some clips from Nancy Pelosi and former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia discussing China. And what is happening there, this persecution of religious minorities, Christians, Uyghurs, others, and how it's being facilitated by U.S. businesses. That's right. Well, join me now to talk more about this, Bob Fu with China Aid, our good friend. Bob, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for having me again.
Let's talk about this. It was quite remarkable to see House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, former Congressman Frank Wolf, who I know are friends because he has told me that Nancy Pelosi does care about this issue of religious freedom, but they were focused on China. Was it good to see such a fine focus on that country?
Yes, absolutely. I can tell at least three very quick takeaways from that panel of Pelosi, Wolf, and even Ambassador Brownback there. And number one is really this freedom is in the worst in 30 right. to 40 in 40 years in China. Number two is both of them call for actions, including sanction of the current Communist Party secretary leader in Xinjiang, who set up these camps, Chen Quanguo, according to Global Magnitsky Act. And number three is to hold those enablers of the persecution, the Western companies, high technology companies, who provide the surveillance technology that enable the Communist Party to provide the so-called social credit score system, which will marginalize millions of religious believers, including, of course, millions of Christians, and certainly those...
I think this is an extremely important point that, we're in the midst of trade negotiations with China. 20 years ago, we were looking at giving... we were debating giving China a permanent most favored nation status when it came to trade. And we were talking about, or the prevailing argument was, well, we do trade with them, and we will change their values when it comes to human rights. But, Bob, it looks like 20 years later, American businesses are the ones who have changed their values mm-hmm. to partner with China to repress religious freedom and to be abusers in human rights.
It is astonishing. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, I mean, we said 29 years ago when China was given the PNTR WTO status, the deficit between U.S. and China is $5 billion. Every year is $5 billion. Now, every week is $5 billion, and we have the worst communist regime now persecuting, you know, all the religious believers, and we need, and partially is this worsening situation had been aided and supported, right, enabled, empowered by these Western companies.
Well, you mentioned, you know, Cisco being one of those companies,
yeah,
that has provided
Cisco
the technology
company
to do the facial recognition.
Yeah, you have Apple, and they purposely echoed the Chinese Communist Party's demand by removing those they call it VPN, the kind of internet circumvention, you know, software from the Apple Store in China.
Right.
And they are also establishing a separate regional China cloud system inside China by handing over this user status all to China. Can you imagine if house church believers, you know, they're worshiping you know, in the underground church, and knowing that their database were already put in the Chinese Communist Party hands, supplied by the Apple company.
So, Bob Fu, from your perspective, what do you see the United States government? What should we be doing to? I mean, look, big country. China's a big country. A global impact from their economy. I mean, they're a big player.
They are big players, and it's absolutely imperative, I think, for President Trump to reconnect the trade with human rights and the religious freedom.
Is he doing right by playing hardball with China?
Absolutely right. I think he has the guts. I mean, compared to all the previous administrations, he's the first one. I call what it is. It's the persecution and the kind of enormous China's taking advantage of the U.S.
Do you think he can make a difference by standing up to them?
Oh, absolutely. I think he can certainly do more, basically, to publicly connect the trade with human rights and the religious freedom.
All right. We're almost out of time, Bob. Very quickly, what can Christians in this country, in the United States of America, what can we be doing to support our brothers and sisters in China?
Well, Christians here, firstly, we can pray and also take prayerful actions for those who are persecuted, you know, in China. And certainly we should encourage our member of Congress, our president, to stand tough and firm and solid, united with those persecuted. And certainly, you know, lots of actions can be taken, like the Uyghur Human Rights and Policy Act.
Right.
So Congress should pass it without hesitation. And certainly we should sanction those perpetrators, like
right,
Chen Quanguo and other persecutors, hold them accountable.
Bob, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
And folks, I would encourage you to check out Bob Fu and China Aid. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Follow the links over. Great ministry. They do tremendous work. We partner with them on the international front. So check them out. Stand with them. Support them. And stay right where you are. Don't go away, because on the other side of this break, more Washington Watch coming up from the second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Did you know that thanks to President Trump, abortion giant Planned Parenthood can no longer receive up to $60 million in federal funding? This new federal protection for the unborn is thanks to a rule change that the Trump administration implemented to the Title X Family Planning Grant Program, which will take effect in May 2019. Not only do the new Title X rule changes take funding away from our nation's largest abortion supplier, they also ensure that taxpayer dollars are not used for abortion and open the door for pro-life pregnancy resource centers and other faith-based organizations to apply for Title X funds, thus expanding the health care options of needy families who are experiencing unexpected pregnancies. For more information about the new Title X rule changes that protect the unborn and increase health care options, visit frc.org/Title X. That's frc.org/Title X.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. We're wrapping up this second annual Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, a meeting, a gathering. Ministerial is just a fancy name for a meeting of over 1,000 religious, civil, and governmental leaders from over 100 countries, summons to Washington, D.C. by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to focus on religious freedom internationally. We heard stories from a number of individuals who have been persecuted for their faith. I don't know if I've mentioned it, but Andrew Brunson's been with us all week here. In fact, I was sitting with him today as the Vice President, Secretary of State spoke. And so recognizing those cases. But then today is where the rubber meets the road. And this is what's good about meetings is that, you know, you can talk about stuff, but it's the takeaways. What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do with the information you now have? And so today, the bulk of today, besides the speeches from the secretary and from the vice president, each of the foreign government leaders kind of went around the table and said, what was happening in their country and then pledged to take certain actions. And as I mentioned earlier, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo started off the day by announcing a new International Religious Freedom Alliance. Now, its mission will be to find ways to promote this most basic human right and to hold abusers of it accountable. The idea here is to create peer pressure among countries to respect religious freedom. See, China's doing the same thing. China's on the other side of the equation. In fact, they released a statement along with Saudi Arabia and some other Muslim countries praising China for their human rights record, which was kind of crazy. But that's what's going on here. So just trying to build a club, if you will, of countries who will respect religious freedom. It's the power of, again, peer pressure from countries. So that was the step that Mike Pompeo took. And one of the countries, I always like to listen to Hungary. And we've actually done quite a bit with Hungary. But their Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Peter Szijjártó, had this to say when it came to his turn.
Christianity is the most persecuted religion on all over the earth. All four or five men and women who are persecuted for their belief are Christians. And if you look at the facts, they say that 245 million Christians are being persecuted all over the world.
The only country really to zero in on the persecution of Christians, and then they went into all the activities that they're doing in terms of rebuilding homes and churches in the Middle East, Syria and Iraq. Anyway, it was just interesting, and that dynamic is, the peer pressure of, yes, I'm doing this, and it was almost, all right, well, you did this, but let me show you, I'm going to one-up you, I'm going to do this. And so each year we're kind of building on this, and it just kind of ramps up the priority and the focus on international religious freedom, several announcing that they had also created the positions of ambassadors for religious freedom and taking different steps to bring a focus upon it. Well, joining me now to talk more about this is the Vice President of Policy and Governmental Affairs here at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber, who's been with me all week at the ministerial at the State Department. Travis, welcome back on.
Thank you, Tony.
I think you can just be my co-host here. You're making a regular appearance.
We're covering a lot of international religious freedom this week.
Yeah, so highlights from today.
So today, I think, you know, the highlights, obviously, the government minister day, government official day. We heard from a vice president, Secretary Pompeo, Ambassador Brownback, other government officials. I caught a bit of the Israeli foreign minister's statement. We just heard from the Hungarian foreign minister. Hearing, as you pointed out, the opportunity for countries to declare where they stand on international religious freedom. Are they going to show up at the ministerial here in Washington and say, we stand with what the United States is doing, with what Trump administration is doing, the first time a U.S. administration has taken a strong stance with an event like this? Or are they going to be like China and others, not show up, not declare where they stand in religious freedom because they don't have a good place to stand in religious freedom? And it's just clear. It kind of leaves people with leaves countries with no opportunity, but it puts them into a corner, and they have less of an opportunity. They're being squeezed, and they eventually will have to take a stand on religious freedom worldwide.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that Secretary of State also called out Cuba this morning. You know, we highlighted that on the program on Tuesday with Christina Arriaga, one of the commissioners on the USERF. Five pastors from Cuba invited to come to the ministerial. Four of them were detained at the airport, one of them suggesting possibly it was a mistake, they didn't catch him and let him go, but four of them detained and not allowed to come to the ministerial. And then from the main podium there today, the Secretary of State called Cuba out.
He did, and Tony, I've heard from the folks who are tracking in Cuba over the last year how the pastors there, other religious figures, Christians, are being harassed by the government as they're trying to just participate freely in their society down there and speak out. Again, that's an example of a country that needs to be called out, along with Venezuela, who was also called out for its restrictions.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of attention, and we've already talked about it here, but a lot of attention focused on China. You really can't talk about religious persecution and not talk about China.
Tony, China is a huge problem, as we've heard all week, as we've discussed. As you know now, we're taking a stand and moving into a place where we're really trying to focus on the problems in China. We saw Chris Smith today. We heard from him on the program. He has the Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act now, calling attention to the persecution of Uyghurs in Western China. We've heard about the detention of pastors and shutting down of churches in other parts of China. China is a huge problem for so many reasons. And we need to call out the religious freedom problem there, the conditions, adverse conditions on religious freedom as part of that.
All right, Travis, we've got about 10 minutes left here. Here's what I want to do now is the problems are great, all right? When you look globally at the issue of religious persecution, we had David Curry on. We didn't get into this year's report from Open Doors, but with each successive year, we're seeing an increase in persecution. And of course, we've talked repeatedly on the program this week that Christians are the single largest group, 80%, according to the British report. And as we had the Bishop of Tyrone on here, that it's Christians, 80%. So we can take this information and we can you know, it can be overwhelming. It's dark. You hear these stories and you can't help but be moved. But we can do something. We're in a position to do something. So let's talk a little bit about what we here in America, Christians who have their freedom, what we can do to help Christians and other believers. I believe we have an obligation to speak out for all people, but what are some of the things we can do?
Tony, I think when we think about weighing in on this issue and taking action, this is something that we are really going to focus on, and there are opportunities. We have to look at concrete policy outcomes, clear outcomes in these cases, like Pastor Brunson, who the listeners know well, helping get him home from Turkey. We need to weigh in on.
Let's take that as a case study for just a moment. I was thinking about this today because I've got on my desk a stack of people who are in prisons around the world, and I know we can't do for these individuals as we do for everyone, or like what we did with Pastor Brunson. We can't do that for everybody. I mean, there's a lot of energy and effort went into it. But as a result of what was done for him, it raised the profile of all prisoners, and it aided many. But this is how our listeners were involved. And number one, we had the petitions saying that the pledge is to pray for Andrew Brunson on two occasions, which we transmitted him. In fact, I delivered it to him when I went to Izmir, Turkey. Also, we were able to raise this to the level of concern with the administration that the president himself and the vice president repeatedly weighing in with Turkish officials. So this is how people participated in that process. So when we put this out here in a particular case by people responding and taking action, it makes a difference. And it was acknowledged today as Andrew was sitting to my left there in this second annual gathering where last year he was a focal point because he was still in prison.
Tony, this story is an illustration of how people can make a difference personally. One voice can make a difference. In addition, we have to go back and remember the Trump administration sanctioned, using Treasury Department and Global Magnitsky Act authorities, sanctioned high-level Turkish officials for their complicity in human rights abuses with the Brunson case. This is a direct policy outcome of your voice in D.C., of the work we're trying to do in D.C. So it's right. Not only about signing a petition. We're trying to understand how to advocate for religious freedom and be everyone around America. We can be your voice in D.C. by understanding how to work the issue here, because people are in prison in Indonesia, Pakistan, Malaysia. We have to look at the issue differently. It's not the same as when you have an issue here with some other religious freedom concern in the United States. We have to approach it shrewdly, understand how to be most effective. That can be through raising an issue with the administration. Every voice makes a difference. And we're going to do this through policy outcomes on religious freedom on Capitol Hill with the administration that affect these outcomes in other countries.
Yeah, and I want to bring that back to why it affects us here. But first, I want to say this. It is also of the utmost importance that we pray for the persecuted. We can pray by name for those that we know, those cases that we bring before you. But you can pray generally because we know it's such a prevalent problem. And I would encourage you in your churches, in your small groups, even as families, adopt a country. You could adopt a country, a person, a family that's being persecuted. And keep this as churches, as pastors in particular, keep this before your people. Because, Travis, as we advocate and we bring attention to religious persecution abroad, we're also educating people here at home why this fundamental first freedom, the freedom of religion, must be protected.
It's a great point, Tony. We have to step back as believers and as anyone who cares about freedom in the United States. We step back and we say, what are we starting with? We're starting with the idea and the principle that everyone naturally as a human being created in the image of God, is free to hold a belief, choose a belief, change their belief, and live that out. That applies whether you're overseas or at home. If it's overseas in a restrictive place, we're going to try to move incrementally towards a better religious freedom conditions. At home, we're trying to protect, preserve what we have, fight back some of the restrictions we've seen here. But we're ultimately fighting for the same thing, whether it's articulated in the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment or Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and International Covenant, Civil and Political Rights. Different language and wording, but the same principle, freedom to choose and change your belief and live it out, whether in the context of someone who's exercising their beliefs, being forced to be complicit in activity in running their business against their conscience here in the United States, or whether someone forced to confess religious beliefs in an Islamist country against their conscience. Same starting principle, different manifestations, one much more severe, right, but same starting principle.
Well, and I want our listeners and our supporters out there across the country to realize that they say, well, you know, we've got enough problems at home. Why are you focused on this issue of religious freedom abroad? Well, here, as we strengthen religious freedom abroad, our freedom of religion becomes stronger here at home. I mean, there is a correlation. I mean, we live in a world – I mean, we saw that under the last administration. When we neglected religious freedom, here, we began to see tyrants and terrorists abroad begin to target people. And so when we put a priority on it in our foreign policy, it's going to translate into our domestic policy, which we're seeing in this administration. And this is an educational moment, I think, to show people that if you fail to protect – something that America's founders recognized was not a right granted by government, but rather by God, latent on the heart of man, but had to be uncovered. And we did that successfully, and it's created the most remarkable country in the history of the world. But if we lose an understanding of this first freedom, we could be like China. We could end up like North Korea. I mean, it would take some time. But we could see quickly, like some of the countries in Europe, losing that freedom of religion, the ability to express it and live by it.
Without a people willing to understand what they're fighting for and willing to fight for it, you eventually lose it. Tony, this is why the commission, the Human Rights Commission that Secretary Pompeo announced is so important too, integral to building that principle. Let me just add a hopeful note here. Looking at China, very oppressive. We're working to stop the oppression there. At the same time, the church is growing.
Yeah.
Tony, at some point, we could have a body of believers in China that's larger than anywhere else
Actually,
in the world.
Getting close.
And so we look at a world, ultimately a world, worldwide body of believers bound together by unity in the body of Christ. This is something that really should make our minds percolate when we think about religious freedom internationally and here at home.
Yeah. Now, there's plenty to be encouraged about, and one is the opportunity we've been given at this moment to not just talk about religious freedom, but bring tangible hope and help to the persecuted around the globe. Travis, great to be with you this week. Thanks so much for providing insight and commentary on this week's ministerial.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, out of time. Thank you for joining us this week. If you missed anything, again, check it out at tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.